from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Advice on life comes in all styles and flavors. You get it from your parents, your teachers, your boss, your friend, your doctor, maybe from Oprah, from infomercials, from the late, great Ann Landers. Our guest tonight, humorist Al Franken, has written what he modestly calls the first truly indispensable book of the new millennium, a handy user's manual for human existence called Oh, the Things I Know, a guide to success or failing that, happiness. Al Franken has taken his smart, dry wit to America's funny bone as actor, writer, producer, and political satirist. Today, Dr. Al Franken, as he now likes to be called, has an honorary PhD under his belt and is ready to dispense his advice on everything from sex to religion, from the weight you'll gain to the old age home you'll end up in. Listeners, the good satirist and sage Dr. Al Franken is with us and ready to set you straight. So bring your big life questions to the foot of the master. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Al Franken, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for being with us. We're also joined tonight from the studios of Vermont Public Radio by our news analyst, Jack Beeney, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Franken.
Hey, Jack. I love your magazine.
Oh, thank you.
It's a love fest. Al Franken, first bit of advice. How is the book selling? Do you advise writing self-help books?
Yes. Very, very sort of a genre that seems to sell very well. And the book's doing very well. It just, Wednesday we learned we're going to be on the bestseller list for the fifth time.
It's been
Times bestseller.
Congratulations! It's been graduation season. Arteary-eyed mothers and fathers pressing this into the hands of their young sons and daughters heading out into life.
They have been, but I think of it more as a 4th of July book.
And after that, perhaps Halloween and Columbus Day.
Yeah, Labor Day too.
We are told that your publisher put a couple of self-help books in your hands, one by Anna Quinlan and one by Maria Shriver, sort of like the red cape before the bull, and you went for it.
Well, first one I read was Anna Quinlan's. It's called A Short Guide to a Happy Life, and I was very impressed with the ending. At the end, the very end of the book, she said that she learned from the teachers you wouldn't expect, and she talked about a homeless man who lived in Coney Island. She was sitting on the pier with him, and she asked him why he didn't go to rehab or a shelter, and she has him say, he said, look at the view, young lady. Just look at the view. And then she writes, words of wisdom from a man without a dime in his pocket, nowhere to go. Look at the view. Whenever I do what he said, I'm never disappointed. And I realize what a great writer she is, that Anna Quinlan is, because a great writer has to be resourceful. Because what the homeless man did say to her when she said, why don't you go to a shelter or a rehab, was not, look at the view, young lady, just look at the view. What he actually said was, eat me. And she knew instinctively that
what he really meant.
That you cannot end the book with words of wisdom for a man with not a dime in his pocket, nowhere to go, eat me. I do what he said, I am never disappointed.
That would not be the way. So, but you were able to see what she saw. You caught the true view there, Al Franken.
Well, I read this treacle, and this insipid treacle, and I said, I am going to do an advice book that does not sugarcoat advice. I am not going to lie to my reader about his potential, like some self-help authors, such as the Dalai Lama.
Ooh.
I will not do that.
Even the Dalai Lama is a treacle salesman to you.
Well, I just think that he sugarcoats things a little bit. And my book is more sets things straight. First chapter is, the mistakes you'll keep repeating. There's a chapter, the person of your dreams versus the person you can actually attract. The chapter on marriage is, just looking at your spouse will make your skin crawl. The last chapter is, the nursing home you'll wind up in.
You're dealing with all the big issues. Al Franken, we want to enter into the spirit of your advice this evening, and if you'd be good enough to set us on the straight and narrow that you've found. And I guess the first thing that struck me and had a lot of people laughing here today was, your advice on how to tell the difference between good advice and bad advice.
Well, I have a lot of bad advice in my book, and it really is there to keep the reader on his toes. So there's really, for example, I did a lot of research, including Anna Quinlan and Maria Shriver's books, a lot written for commencement. And a lot of these are written by very successful people. And there's a leitmotif that runs through it, which is that success is fraudulent. Okay, so a common theme you'll hear is it's lonely at the top.
It's just not the thing to gun for.
It's lonely at the top, and it's not. It's much, much lonelier at the bottom. Another useless bromide you hear is when one door closes, another door always opens. That's not true.
Not your experience.
No, and sometimes when that other door opens, it's a trap door leading to the lonely place at the bottom. Here's another one. Anna Quinlan quotes this. A lot of commencement speakers quote this. Paul Tsongas, late Massachusetts senator, once said, "No man on his deathbed ever said, I wish I had spent more time at the office." How does he know that? Somebody must have, you know, used their last breath to say, "I wish I had spent more time at the office when I was in my 20s and 30s. I would have had a much better life," gurgle, dead. You know, and I'm sure that some former, you know, WorldCom or Enron executive on his deathbed will say, "I wish I had spent more time at the office and less time in prison."
So there are options here.
So I take on a lot of bad advice, but I offer some of my own.
Any that's genuinely good advice, or should we watch out at every turn?
Well, most of it is like I talk about parenting, and I talk about the importance of quantity time as opposed to quality time. I hate that phrase, quality time.
You describe sitting with your father watching television as he smoked his pipe and coughed up phlegm.
Coughed up phlegm. My dad,
it's very moving,
inhaled a pipe for 50 years and ended up getting, you know, emphysema. But he loved comedians. I think this is why I became a comedian. And he spent a lot of quantity time with me. You know, just stupid, non-productive quantity time. And a lot of it was watching comedians on TV. And any time someone would really get him on a laughing jag, he would start laughing, then start coughing. And because of his condition, he would cough up phlegm. And my mother, if Johnny Carson introduced Buddy Hackett and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Buddy Hackett," my mother would just get up and leave.
But that wasn't your choice.
No, I actually didn't. You know, it was pretty disgusting when Dad coughed it up, but I think this is why I became a comedian. I love my dad. It was just Father's Day, and I just thought of a story about my dad. Speaking of inhaling a pipe, he died about 8 years ago of lung cancer. He was 85. He lived a great life and loved that pipe. And I just thought of this story the other day, and I haven't told it. Right before he died at home, and about a week before he died, the rabbi wanted to visit him. And I had not actually discussed with my dad the fact that he was dying. I think we all knew it, but we just didn't openly discuss it. So I discouraged the rabbi from coming by because that was sort of an acknowledgement. Well, the rabbi insisted on, like, comforting my mother. So he comes over, and he's in our living room with my brother and me and my mom, and he says, "Well, can I visit your dad?" And this is about a week before he dies. So I go in to talk to my dad. I said, "Dad, Rabbi Black wants to talk to you. Is that okay?" And my dad says, and he's very weak, and he's in his bed, and he says, "Well, I don't really know him," because he didn't. This is the young rabbi, but this is my dad. This is everything you have to know about my dad. He says, "But if he feels it'll do him some good."
If it makes him feel better.
Yeah.
There you've got it.
I laughed so hard, and I saw that smile from my dad, and that was my dad.
Now your dad was not then what apparently is the much more typical American who is an avid consumer of advice, whether it's from the young rabbi or from books off the shelf.
Well, I say that in the book, I say my dad never gave me any advice at all, which would have made my job a lot easier because if he had said anything witty, I could have used, witty in terms of advice. Everything he said was witty, but he never gave me advice.
Just wasn't there.
Well, I think, you know, that maybe that's the best advice of all, which is that you have to discover it for yourself. And he spent a lot of time with us.
Jack Beatty, are we feeling illuminated yet?
Well, we're getting close. For one thing, as a book writer myself, I really appreciate the calculation that went into your dedication here, Mr. Franken, for Oprah.
Yeah.
That's good thinking. That's good thinking.
I thought it was good thinking. We went to, people have accused me of trying to get to be a selection for Oprah's book club by dedicating it for Oprah.
Of course, you spoiled the whole game, right? She
then
stuck.
About like a week before we come out, she gets rid of the book club, so she's a bitch. That's what I'm saying.
Just not high on your list.
I actually love Oprah a lot, and it just so happens that there was a lot of wasted compliments for Oprah.
Oprah's all over your book here.
She's all over my book.
Yeah.
It was a running joke, and then she, you know.
Not the best example of foresight here.
No.
Al Franken, there is so much advice needed in the world these days. George W. Bush is sitting there in the White House with an awful lot on his plate and surely could use you at his elbow these days. What thoughts come to mind as advice that this relatively young president might benefit from?
This could be a know your limitations kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Language is not his strong suit, and he should probably not try to coin phrase. Evildoers, I thought was bad. Evildoers.
You got a lot of mileage with that phrase.
Well, he got a lot of mileage, I think, because the rest of the administration started using it to make it, you know, sound like an actual word.
Support the boss?
Yeah, and it was funny. You'd see Ari Fleischer saying, evildoer, evildoer this, evildoer that, but someone like Cheney, it was very funny to watch him say something like, this is a war. This is not a war against Islam. This is a war to eradicate the evildoers.
I had to say that.
You know,
not easy to spit that out for Dick Cheney.
Yeah. So tell him that. Another thing I would have done is, he called it a crusade.
Yes, he did. Just once, I think.
Yeah, once. He kind of made that mistake.
A lot of reprints on that, though.
And also, originally the operation was Operation Infinite Justice.
Mm.
So my advice would have been to get a Pakistani cab driver from D.C. into the White House and just run the stuff by him.
Just once, at least.
Yeah, you know, like, Operation Infinite Justice. No, please do not call it that. Only Allah can dispense infinite justice. Please, please do not call it that. What else? Crusade! Oh, no! Do not call it a crusade, please!
Whatever you do, Mr. President.
Just bring a Pakistani cab driver.
Al Franken, you say that giving advice presents unique challenges to both the advice giver and the recipient of the advice. How so?
Did I say that?
Well, I'm...
I know I did. Well, the advice giver has... the advice receiver has to realize that, even bad advice can come from even people you respect. So you just have to... If you don't like advice, you can choose to ignore it. Now, I do point out that laws are different than advice. You can't ignore them just because you don't like them. And that's good advice.
That's very sound.
Yeah.
It looks like a couple of people along Wall Street could have used that advice recently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's pretty exciting. And I think there's a lot of prosecutors that are going to be trying to make their bones on these guys. So I think there's going to be some... I'd like to see these guys, you know, actually do prison time and not in, you know, the I'll improve my backhand prison.
Mm-hmm.
But in the kind of prison where after they've served their term and you ask them how was prison, they say, I don't want to talk about it.
The Al Franken prison waiting for those guys. We're talking with Al Franken tonight. He's got a new book out. It's all about advice for you. Oh, the things I know it's called, and there's a lot in here. Oh, the mistakes you'll keep repeating. Oh, you are going to hate your first job. Oh, the drugs you will take. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. The doctor's in, listeners. What advice, what life guidance do you want from Dr. Al Franken? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Al Franken, Ph.D., honorary, and about his new book, Oh, the Things I Know, where he has written and is prepared to share with you the wisdom of his insights into self-help, into life itself. The topics are many. The advice you should ignore. Oh, the personal notes you should write. Oh, the orgasms you'll have. Oh, the orgasms you'll fake. Oh, pick a religion, any religion. Listeners, the doctor is in. What advice, what life guidance do you want from Dr. Al Franken? He's with us tonight, along with our news analyst, Jack Beatty. And right now, Mark is on the line. Welcome, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah, the question I have is, why write a book when, you know, he's been on TV and he was pretty hysterical on television and more people watch TV than read books? Why write a book?
Yeah, so if you're so smart, Al Franken, why are you writing books? Isn't that history?
I like writing books. It's there permanently, you know. You can pick it up anytime. I like books. I guess that's and also there's it's a thing. It's a self-help book. It's not really, actually, by the way.
we got that. We think we read in there somewhere that you wrote it to make money because an investment went bad.
Yes, well, that's exactly right. I wish you hadn't said that, but now that it's out, yes, I had invested heavily in Enron, and that's really why anyone ever writes a book.
Well, one
writes for – it's just really – John Milton wrote because he lost – all his money in the Dutch tulip craze.
This is something we can take away from the Dutch tulip craze. How did you get into Enron, Al Franken?
I just saw it going up, and I just wrote it and got, you know, dissolved my Keo plan and put everything in there and got my family in it and my relatives. And then one day I got this call from Ken Lay saying, Al, don't believe what you're hearing. The stock's fine. And I said, oh, really? Well, will you buy mine? And he hung up. So,
not that close a friend, perhaps.
No. Anyway, so I guess.
Maybe if you'd been.
Mercenary yeah. Writing.
We're talking with Al Franken. The doctor is in, listeners. What advice, what life guidance do you want from Dr. Al Franken? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack, I know that you often spend a pleasant afternoon at the library as you dipped into a little bit of Al Franken. How high was the illumination?
I liked his sort of tone of get with it, get real, realism.
Right.
It reminds me a little bit of a bumper sticker I saw the other day, which I guess is a piece of advice. The bumper sticker was, be the man your dog thinks you are. Now that one.
No more, no less. Really,
no more, no less. And, you know, you've got a passage in here that puts together a lot of my bugbears in one fell swoop. You're saying, to level with yourself, look at yourself in the mirror. Do you have the physique of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the intelligence of Condoleezza Rice, the comic genius of Jerry Steinfeld, or do you have the physique of an Al Roker, the comic genius of a Condoleezza Rice, the classic good looks of a Jerry Seinfeld, the intelligence of November 2001 Playboy playmate Amber Holliday, or the warmth of an Arnold Schwarzenegger? Perhaps you have all of these negative qualities wrapped up in one complete plaque package like Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
I love that.
That's in the chapter, the person of your dreams versus the person you can attract. And
right.
I make the point that that more lives have been ruined by, you know, the pursuit of Mr. or Mrs. Right than the settling for Mr. or Mrs. Acceptable. So the idea is really to find someone not as bad as you, but mm-hmm. sort of within the realm of possibility.
Now, you mentioned here that William Sapphire has married the Amber Holliday, the Playboy playmate. Is that so?
Yeah, I was pointing out the attractiveness of a voluminous vocabulary.
But did that actually happen, or is that just your fancy?
No, they're lies. Okay.
I did a triple take when I saw that.
But I'm surprised, Jack, that you...
I went
for that one.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time bringing us down to earth in this book, but you do advise your readers to go out and get a religion.
Yes, in fact, as a sir, I basically point out that religion is handy every once in a while, and as a service, I rank the world's religions in order of quality.
Hmm. Could you share that ranking with us?
Let me see. I have first is Reform Judaism. Second is conservative Judaism.
Both
third is Unitarianism.
Right, oh, okay.
Now, I have Roman Catholicism fifth.
How's it stocked
down?
Uh-huh.
That will move down for the paperback.
Uh-huh. Okay. Before we go on, what's your criteria here, Al Franken?
Huh.
Oh, I see.
I don't really have... Yeah. The reason Roman Catholicism is moving back is
you
know, I've been following the whole thing. Like when Cardinal Law has been pressured to leave, and when he said he wouldn't resign or retire, he said in his speech that in retrospect, I guess that we hadn't put a high enough priority on protecting the children.
Perhaps not. Perhaps
and,
not.
And I looked it up, and I think he's right, because they had it at number 12.
It was pretty far down their list.
Bingo was 9.
you put Islam...
But, you know, I'm Jewish, and which is why I guess I have Reform Judaism first, and that's what I am. But
you've got Hinduism and Confucianism lumped in here at about 8 or 9, as I recall.
Yeah, I lumped a few together. They're just sort of... They're all fine. That's the whole point of the chapter, is that they're all pretty much fine.
And Islamic fundamentalism at the bottom, but you say you're willing to reconsider.
Yeah, if they change their attitude.
This is sort of along the lines of President Bush's speech to the Palestinians last week.
Yeah, a little, some reform, but I think there's very little chance of either thing happening. But I was saying, I'm Jewish, and I just don't want your Roman Catholic listeners to think that I'm prejudiced against Catholics. I married... an Irish Catholic girl. I deflowered her and got her to renounce the Pope, but I've been married for 26 years.
This sounds like some kind of evildoer activity. why do you say that your reader ought to have a religion at hand?
It's just handy in times of crisis to have some kind of spiritual life. It's a crutch. But it's a good crutch. It's good.
You don't mean it in the Jesse Ventura way, then? You mean it's a truly helpful thing?
Jesse Ventura in the Playboy interview said this. I think he said, "Organized religion is a crutch."
I think you got it. I think you nailed it.
And also at the end of the interview, I'm from Minnesota.
Yeah.
I'm from Minnesota, and we are so proud. At the end of his interview, he was asked. This is the Playboy interview. If you were reincarnated, what would you like to come back with? And he said, as a 38 double D bra. So we are so proud.
You should be proud. Neil is on the line. Welcome, Neil. You're on the air with Al Franken.
Well, thank you. I wanted to, the discussion has been very apropos. I wanted to ask Dr. Franken specifically about religion. Now that the Supreme Court has ruled that vouchers are okay, and we'll see the quality of our public schools deteriorating, I thought I'd ask what I should do with a voucher. What school should I send my religious school should I send my child to? I'm a lapsed Reform Jew myself.
Okay, so we've got the profile. And what are you looking for? What do you want your child to achieve in life, Neil?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I would like him to move out when he's 18.
Al Franken, there's the profile. What do you suggest that to Neil?
Well, I think Neil, first of all, has to find a parochial or private school that only costs $2,000, because I think that's what the vouchers are.
At best.
So that would be, I guess, a Roman Catholic school where they use the slave labor of the nuns and priests.
And
I don't know how many of those there's going to be. I just think that the school vouchers are kind of a false hope. And that they're so small. I mean, if they were actually like $8,500 or the exact amount that it does cost to educate, that would be an actual thing. But
it's a subsidy.
Yeah, and it should be means tested. I mean, I could see something like that. I could see experimenting with them in that way. But $2,000, I don't get a $2,000 voucher.
And Neil's son, a Reform Jew in a Catholic school, does that work for you?
I don't care.
There you are. There you are.
I don't care.
It's a very magnanimous view. Neil,
yeah.
Neil, thank you for your question. We're talking with Dr. Al Franken. Give him your deep, burning life question. He's dispensing advice. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Mary Beth is on the line. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Dr. Al, I have a question. I'm an actress in New York, and I thought maybe you could give me some advice as how I could make my career more successful, because it's not. And if not, what else should I do?
Now, you're not Mary Beth Hurt, are you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately.
Because I was going to say then that I think you have a great career. But since you're not Mary Beth Hurt.
No.
Boy, this is, I would move to Los Angeles. And
yeah.
Try to get into some kind of, do like a, oh, I don't know, a foot powder commercial or something like that. Or
how are your feet, Mary Beth?
They're beautiful.
Well, there's a possibility then.
I this is not a field I know. I know the sort of comedy field, but do you feel that you're a very good actress?
I am a good actress.
Well, I think that you just, do you wait tables and do something else?
I guess, you know, the question is, how long do you hang on? You keep on doing it and doing it and doing it.
This is a serious question, Dr. Al Franken.
I just would have a, I would never, for example, I would feel terrible if my daughter told me that she wanted to be an actress. Unless you really, that's the only thing you, I feel like if you're in my business, which is in show business, it's got to be because you can't do anything else. Not intellectually, but emotionally. And if you can't do anything else but act, then you, by God, you should keep doing it.
Is that you, Mary Beth?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, well, good luck. And
good luck, Mary Beth. Yeah. Good luck.
There you've got it. The very best wishes. But as you know, Dr. Al Franken, it may or may not work out. What's your advice for dealing with disappointment?
Well, you know, a lot of people say that you learn more from failure than you learn from success. And that's not true. I think you learn more from success because success gives you more opportunities. And then you can fail again. Or then you can fail for the first time. And sometimes, like, one success gives you, like, the opportunity to fail several more times. So I would probably learn that after failing several times, you may be wanting to tell yourself that maybe I'm not learning anything and actually just kind of do something else.
Have you learned yourself from mistakes that helped you to dispense the wisdom of the book?
Yeah, and that's one of them, because I've had success and I've had failures, and I have not seen that failure.
Did you say you've had sex?
Particular.
We thought. Did you say you've had sex, Dr. Franken? Is that what we heard?
I've had success.
Oh, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
And I've had sex.
Well,
and
you,
I've had success at sex.
Well, you get into that a bit in the orgasms you'll have, but
right.
is that really a fair promise?
Yes. I've sort of divided it into two chapters. One is, oh, the orgasms you'll have, and that's more for guys. And then the one for women is, oh, the orgasms you'll fake.
That's just the way it is?
No, but I take a very hard line in, oh, the orgasms you'll fake, which is that I believe in total honesty regarding orgasms. And some women say, well, that's easy for you to say. You couldn't fake an orgasm if you wanted to, Al, and that's beside the point. And by the way, Tom, I could. In that chapter, the women who read it are the beneficiary of all my knowledge of female sexuality.
It's a pretty short chapter.
It is. And from what I read in a dentist's office in a magazine article is that there are two reasons and it might have been Harper's. There are two reasons that women, or it might have been Atlantic Monthly, I'm not sure. There are two reasons women have fake orgasms, and the first is to get her partner off her.
Enough already.
Okay.
No, I mean, she might be thinking enough already.
Oh yeah. And the second, I can't remember what that one is.
Well, in the heat of the moment, you might not. Peter's on the line. Welcome, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I had question that has to do with daughters and their sensitivity to the way fathers can react or talk. And I know, Al, you were at Class Day at Harvard, and my daughter actually graduated, so I was there, too, listening. And I wondered how you're, you know, just what advice would you have for fathers out there whose daughters are, you know, in, you know, late teens, early 20s, and they really can be very sensitive to the way you, you know, behave, what you say and everything. How's it work with you?
Peter, just let me clarify. Do you have some issues here? Have you blown it in some way, Peter?
Oh, I mean, it's just like...
Now, she graduated from Harvard this year.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, first of all.
Well, I know that you'll be sitting there next year listening to Madonna.
Yes. That's a joke from the speech, but that is interesting. What issues do you have with?
Well, I should keep focused and pick up on what people say and not say non sequiturs.
That's what she says to you.
Yeah, she says I can be just really off topic.
We need some advice here, Al Franken.
You know, just from the little bit we've talked about here, I would agree with her. For example, the Madonna line.
Kind of out of nowhere.
That didn't mean anything to anybody.
It left me totally nonplussed,
other than
as they
me.
Say. Yeah, yeah.
But that might just be the way your brain works, and she should be a little bit more tolerant of her dad.
That's very sage advice, Al Franken. And Peter, thank you for your call, and good luck with your daughter. What about children generally? Do you give advice on children in this book, Al Franken?
Well, yes. As I said, you know, again, I urge this quantity time thing, but I do urge parents to create balance in their lives and not be a slave to their child, because as I point out, no one respects a slave unless he's played by Morgan Freeman.
But there's always violent television to put your children in front of, so you can take care of things that way.
Well, that is the name of the chapter on parenting, Oh, the Violent Television Your Children Will Watch. And Joe Lieberman likes to cite a statistic, which at first blush sounds very alarming. He says that by the time a kid is 18 years old in this country, he'll have seen over 26,000 murders on television. Now, that sounds like a lot.
Yes, it does.
But if you do the math, it's only six a day.
So it's really not as bad as all that.
No. So I don't know what he's got his yarmulke in a twist about. Also, he wants to block out the internet.
No can do?
Well, you know, in libraries and schools. Mm-hmm. I think the internet is a great learning tool. My son last year did a great sixth grade report using the internet on bestiality.
We're gonna hold that right there. We're going to savor that, Al Franken. We're taking a short break. The Doctor's In. Listeners, what advice, what life guidance do you want from Dr. Al Franken? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined tonight by Dr. Al Franken. He's got a new book out, Oh, the Things I Know, where he is ready to dispense advice, good, bad, and otherwise, to you in the book and here tonight. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. What advice do you want from humorist, satirist, and now self-help advisor Al Franken? Steve is on the line. Welcome, Steve. You're on the air. Hi.
Dr. Franken.
Yes, Steve.
I've got this problem with my joint and my knee. And
yeah.
Do you recommend orthoscopy or?
Yes.
I was just wondering where you got your doctorate.
Hartford State Technical College.
Did you say Hartford?
Hartford.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What were the circumstances?
I gave a commencement address there. It's actually kind of a funny story. The message that my housekeeper left for me led me to believe I was going to be speaking at Harvard.
Mm, not so.
No, and by the time it all got cleared up, I arrived in Hartford from New York via Cambridge. I was so angry and tired that I'm afraid I took it out on the graduates there.
Did you leave them inspired?
No, I just, I said, you know, when I was asked to speak here, I gladly accepted because, you see, I thought I'd been asked to speak at Harvard. And then it went downhill from there. They got kind of insulted, I said, which would have been quite an honor. But instead, I'm here with you, the future air conditioner repairman of America.
That is the working, good working people of America.
Yeah. As I said, I was tired and angry.
Shame to take it out on the good working people of America, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I learned, that was a mistake I learned from, to be more positive.
Jack Beatty, do you feel that uplift tonight in Al Franken's worldview?
Well, you know, what I hear is the voice of the sort of the man who takes life as it is and who says, well, suppose we gave advice about the real score rather than the sort of valetudinarian advice we get at college commencements. What would that be like? And I hear it in the and that runs through here, that kind of, you know, man on the street realism, size up about the real odds in life. And in a way, it's kind of bracing. He's saying, hey, you can still have, you can know the score and still generate some wisdom out of that, which I found kind of comforting.
I laughed for an hour. It's a thin book, but it got me going. Al Franken,
well,
our time is...
thank you, guys. I couldn't have put it better myself.
Well, our time is running down, but you say, oh, the best is yet to come. Is it, Al Franken? We want to believe that.
Well, yeah. You know, scientists tell us that by the end of this century, people may live to be 150 years old. And they say the first 50 years are going to be very good. The next 50 years will be not so good. And the third 50 years will be absolutely horrendous. But I'm looking forward to that middle 50.
You got your eye set on that.
Yeah.
But then the last 50 come with the package, I guess.
Absolutely horrendous. An entire 50. No. I think you have to maintain a positive attitude, and that's what I learned at Hartford State Teachers College.
Well, we can't thank you enough for sharing
thank you, guys.
All this advice with us tonight. Parting
Jack,
thoughts, Dr.
I want to tape what you just said.
We'll get that to you. guaranteed. Parting thought for our listeners, Dr. Al Franken?
Makes a great gift. A lot of people think it's a commencement book, but it's more really a 4th of July book, as I said.
Or failing that, Labor Day.
Yeah.
Al Franken, marvelous to have you on. Please keep dispensing the advice in all media.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being with us. Al Franken is author of the new book, Oh, the Things I Know. Jack Beatty, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
In a moment, On Point's movie maven looks at the man behind the number one movie at the box office. This is On Point. Science fiction writer Philip K. Dick never achieved much commercial success in his lifetime, but 20 years after his death, the dark, schizophrenic visionary has become one of the hottest names in Hollywood. Minority Report, based on a Dick short story, is the number one movie in the box office this week. Variety reports that three more movies based on his writings are in the works. Philip Dick's future is not one of spaceships and high-tech luxuries. It's one of alienation and troubling questions of what it means to be human. On Point movie maven Garen Daly joins me now with a look at the film legacy of the futurist Philip K. Dick. Hello, Garen.
Hey, Tom.
So, Philip K. Dick dies in 1982, and here we are two decades later looking back on a half dozen movies and many more in the works. What is the appeal of this very dark view of the future?
You know, he started off with an exploration that was more internal rather than external. Most of the science fiction writers of the 50s and 60s were doing the bug-eyed monsters, trips to Venus, trip to Mars. He was looking at something completely different. And it's interesting, he died in 1982, but he got to see his only film to be made in his lifetime, and that was Blade Runner, the classic Ridley Scott, Harrison Ford, Sean Young film. And in that film, what happens is that Harrison Ford is a Blade Runner. He is going to retire replicants who are these humanoid robots who do all the dangerous work. But he runs into one, a young woman played by Sean Young at this big corporation who doesn't really know that she's a replicant. But she has memories of her childhood.
Look, it's me with my mother.
Yeah?
You remember the spider that lived in a bush outside your window? Orange body, green legs. Watched her build a web all summer. Then one day there's a big egg in it. The egg hatched.
The egg hatched.
And
100 baby spiders came out. And they ate her.
Implants. Those aren't your memories. They're somebody else's.
The Philip K. Dick universe, nothing is sacred, not even memory.
Not even memory. And what happens is that if you can't trust your memories, can you trust your reality?
Tell us about him. He was schizophrenic. He was drug addicted. Who was Philip K. Dick?
He was this guy who considered himself a fictionalizing philosopher.
Okay.
And he was exploring his own anxieties and his own troubled mind through his writings. In 1972, he had an episode where he saw a pink beam of light hit his brain. And at that point, he started realizing that he was really schizophrenic. And if you start looking at his films, you see the lack of reality coming back and forth in his life.
And as you say, this theme of reality versus fantasy that we've now has become one of the great touchstones of Hollywood in recent years was there in Philip K. Dick's work from the very early on.
Very early on in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. In Total Recall, 1990, Arnold Schwarzenegger took one of his stories and explored it into making it into this huge, huge action film. However, the kernel of the story is all about what is reality and what isn't reality. Is Arnold Schwarzenegger in a dream at a place called Recall where he's having a memory implant, or is he actually in a real world?
Let's say you're telling the truth and this is all a dream. And I could pull this trigger and it won't matter.
It won't make the slightest difference to me, Doc. But the consequences to you would be devastating. In your mind, I'll be dead, and with no one to guide you out, you'll be stuck in permanent psychosis. The walls of reality will come crashing down. One minute, you'll be the savior of the rebel cause, and the next thing you know, you'll be Cohagen's bosom buddy. You'll even have fantasies about alien civilizations, as you requested, but in the end, back on Earth, you'll be lobotomized.
The walls of reality, very permeable membrane in the Philip K. Dick world.
Yeah, and what happens in this scene is they are trying to convince him that he is, you know, this kind of construction worker, yet he has memories that he is actually a secret agent. And what keys him that he knows that his reality is real is that the guy that he's talking to has a bead of sweat coming down, and sweat and tears become the actual means of reality and showing humanity. And that's an important thing
for him. The signifiers.
The signifiers, yes.
It's always about what is human as well. What's human, what's machine. He was super attuned to the tension that we now feel very acutely.
Well, he thought that people were rusting because they're becoming more machine-like, and that computers were bleeding because they were becoming more human-like. In 1995, a small film called Screamers came out with Peter Weller in it. It's based on actually my favorite Philip K. Dick called The Second Variety. Takes place on a faraway planet. Big corporations are battling each other. Two armies are going, and all of a sudden there's not many people left. There's only like 4 or 5 people left on the planet. They meet, but they don't know who is real and who is not, because a machine factory of robots has been created, and they're making better and smarter and more intriguing robots, to the point where the leader, Peter Weller, doesn't know who's real, what's happening, and is completely in the dark.
Let's hear a bit of Screamers.
What other type? Pull us off to David. It said type 3. Pull us off the reptile, said type 1. Now, what other type?
It's a wounded soldier, lies on the ground crying.
Help me. Help me.
We thought you discontinued them.
We've never even seen them.
What are they supposed to look like?
Oh, you mean who are they supposed to look like?
Look in the mirror, Ross.
Screamers, look in the mirror, but what's in the mirror?
Well, interestingly enough, again, in that scene, two of those people were robots. Two of those people were humans, and they just don't know what's going on. You know, the reality is always something that Philip K. Dick was looking for. And in fact, I found this wonderful quote. Reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. And that is such a key component of the Philip K. Dick universe. You know, and again, another film that just came out, Imposter. Not a great film, but again, the same themes were being played out through it. It takes place, again, 50 years in the future. Gary Sinise plays a brilliant scientist who is being accused by Vincent D'Onofrio of being an alien plant, that he's there to blow up this factory because Earth is at battle with Alpha Centauri.
It sounds very up to date.
Up to date. And so all of a sudden he escapes and he goes on the run. And he is the ultimate insider who is now on the outside, and he's also the person that is questioning his reality, and the people around him are also questioning their reality.
What to do when you're accused, you know you're not guilty, but everything's too confusing and chaotic to confirm that.
And you got to go on the run, and you got to find people who believe in you.
Tell me what they told you. The ESA.
They told me that you've been arrested for treason.
They think I'm someone else.
Spy.
Maya, please, listen to me.
Why you?
You want me dead. Listen, there's a test in the hospital. It's something they missed. I took it 3 years ago.
A test? What does this have
if
to
I
do
can
with...
run another one, a comparative for proof, they'll see that... Look, it's comprehensive. It's undeniable. You
can't
see?
Come here.
You're not listening to them, are you?
Always that undertone of panic in Philip K. Dick. And now people are surging in to see Minority Report. Take us into the latest of Philip K. Dick's works to hit the screen.
Minority Report has Tom Cruise as a pre-crime cop. What has happened is that they've found out about 50 years in the future that they've put these three precognitive people together who are able to tap into our dreams. And they're able to tap into them in such a way that they're able to predict who is going to murder somebody in a crime of passion.
Therefore, precog. They know before it happens.
That's right. And he is the top cop. He figures this out, and he's able to prevent the murders from happening. What happens is that he ends up being one of the people who looks like he's going to murder somebody, and he has to go on the run. And that is what is all. Again, he's the insider mm-hmm. who goes outside. But the thing that is interesting about this film is that there's the question of choice and the question of predetermination. Which one is really going to happen? And he tries to explain this to Colin Farrell in a very early scene in the movie.
The free will issue.
The precogs see the future and they're never wrong.
But it's not the future if you stop it. Isn't that a fundamental paradox?
Yes, it is. You're talking about predetermination, which happens all the time. Why'd you catch that?
Because it was going to fall.
You're certain?
Yeah.
But it didn't fall. You caught it. The fact that you prevent it from happening doesn't change the fact that it was going to happen.
You ever get any false positives?
Someone intends to kill his boss or his wife, but they never go through with it. How do the precogs tell the difference? Precogs don't see what you intend to do. Only what you will do.
Nothing absolutely certain in the world of Philip K. Dick. Steven Spielberg directs this film. What is it about this author's work, as dark and paranoid as it is, that attracts such top Hollywood directors?
I think it is because it taps into our own paranoia and our own fears now. With Minority Report, we can actually look at it and say, hey, Ashcroft and the government is now trying to capture terrorists before they kill somebody. We can talk about how the question of free choice is an issue. We can talk about the fact that in Minority Report and a lot of these films of Philip K. Dick is all about corporate greed and how corporations are manipulating the reality so that they can look better or be better or make more money. There's a lot in these films, and there's three more on tap. We've got The King of the Elves, Paycheck, and A Scanner Darkly, which is, I can't wait to see that one come out.
It's a Philip K. Dick World Minority Report. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. Liked it very much, very much.
Ghirardelli, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Ghirardelli is On Point's movie maven and owner of the community theater in Dedham, Massachusetts. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is W.